WNUC-LP 967 FM Detroit.
This is Peace Talks Radio, the series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. Since 2002, our mission has been to protect part of the media landscape for focused conversation about the art and science and history of peacemaking. Today we'll be presenting some highlights from our shows produced in the 2019 season, beginning with Suzanne Kreider's conversation with Justin Reamer Thamert, director of the New Mexico Faith Coalition for Immigrant Justice. He offered up some ideas about how to bring closer together opposing sides in the debate over immigration in the U.S. and in other countries around the world.
Standing up, that is hard. See, I'm from a generation. I was in the seventh grade when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and then a few months later, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And so I learned people who speak up and stand up get shot. And I don't want to say I don't stand up for things, but I'm more nervous about that. What would you say to our listeners who are nervous about standing up?
There is an inherent risk to standing up. And I don't think that in my personal journey, that is something that I want to paralyze me. So I can understand that there are certainly risks that people have faced in this country and around the world for standing up. And courageous resistance is something that we just learn step by step. You know, standing up when we see a very small act can lead us to standing up when we see something bigger happen. And especially at this moment in time when we're seeing across the globe so much division and so much xenophobia, the cost of not standing up will end up being something that is much more problematic than being willing to take the risk that it bears on our life. A friend of mine was recently talking to me about sacred activism and sacred activism being something that is tying in the understanding, similar to liberation theology, that our lives and our spiritual journey are intertwined. So while I may aspire towards letting go of ego and moving into higher connection with source energy, I also am living in the physical plane and want to acknowledge that my neighbors who don't have the same privileges that I do or that have been oppressed historically, part of my spiritual journey is learning how to extend that liberation onto others and stand with others who are struggling for liberation. We hear a narrative of people who are rapists and murderers and terrorists, and that is not the reality. So I think first knowing the facts is helpful. Second, understanding the stories. I mean, we are seeing thousands of Central American migrants coming to the United States, and they're largely people under 5 feet tall, and they're very skinny, and they are oftentimes malnourished because of how painful and problematic the journey was for them to bring their children to this country. So just looking at someone like that, they don't pose a threat to us. And I think that if those people are people of faith, recognizing that our faith calls us to be kind and extend generosity and hospitality to our neighbors, and particularly to people that we don't know, the people that might be called the stranger in some traditions.
In the same program, Suzanne talked with Bawa Jane, the Secretary General of the Millennium World Peace Summit of Religious and Spiritual Leaders that opened at the United Nations in August 2000. Mr. Jane's been a key figure in cooperative interfaith efforts to address many of the planet's ills. And lately, he's been a leader at the Center for Responsible Leadership. He talked with Suzanne about that work to inspire leaders in both spiritual and political realms to step up and uphold nonviolent principles as they lead. Principles that we can all apply to resolving conflicts with others.
Our first principle is to go and try and engage in a dialogue. You just can't condemn or demonize anybody because of what they're doing. All we can do is start to engage with them. And we are doing this because we know there is need for it. There is violence, there is conflict, there is tension. So we promote this. But now what we are trying to promote is responsible leadership. Because part of responsible leadership is making decisions based on the future, not the present. Making decisions based on conviction, not convenience. Sometimes it might be convenient, you know, if you get angry, like to hit somebody. That is convenient. But is that what you really should be doing? Is that going to help resolve it? It will have consequences. Any of our actions have consequences. And the third part of our principles of responsible leadership is it constructive or destructive? So here, again, with the principles of nonviolence, if you've engaged in a violent situation, then that is destruction.
If the other person is really struggling or they're really being sincere, well, what do I do next?
Be understanding, have some compassion. And oftentimes, don't volunteer and try and pronounce judgments. Just listen. Listen. Don't jump to a conclusion or judgment. Keep engaging. Keep the conversation going.
Bawa Jane and before him Justin Reamer Thamert in our program called Immigration Compassion and a Call for Peace Leaders. Hear the whole show in our February 2019 episode online at peacetalksradio.com, where also our October 29 episode can be found. It was called Facing Our Fears, What's Real and What's Imagined, featuring our host Megan Kamrick talking with former Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano.
How are we making mistakes in evaluating true threats?
I think the biggest mistake is to kind of focus only on the southwest border as if that is a danger to the safety and security of the American people.
What are the biggest threats that you see right now to Homeland Security?
I would say three. One of those three is definitely the rise of domestic terrorism and mass gun violence. It is high time to enact some gun safety measures at the federal level, universal background checks. I think we ought to reconsider the ban on assault weapons. Two other risks, cybersecurity, huge. Complicated, has evolved a great deal. You know, when I started as secretary, spent maybe 10% of my time on cybersecurity. By the time I left, it was a good 40% of my time. And now we've seen ransomware attacks, denial of service attacks, different kinds of hacking, the theft of personal information, and we've seen an attack on our democracy itself. Mm-hmm. In the 2016 election, and with no confidence that that has been adequately dealt with or that that infiltration of our electoral process by the Russians is not still continuing. I think the intelligence community has concluded and warned us that it is continuing, but we have no national plan on how to deal with it. And the third risk I would identify are the risks associated with global warming. We are seeing a perceptible increase in migration from south to north across the planet. And we are having the creation of so-called climate refugees, people leaving their homelands because of extreme drought that's destroyed the agricultural economy. And we have areas of the world where, due to global warming, as I mentioned, the local economies have been affected and destroyed, leaving a population of primarily young men growing up hopeless, helpless, and ripe for terrorist recruitment.
In addition to Janet Napolitano, Megan Kamrick also talked with sociologist and author Barry Glassner, who wrote The Culture of Fear, Why Americans Are Afraid of the Wrong Things.
I think that there have been fears around for a long time, but right now what's going on is that it's very profitable for a lot of different organizations and individuals to be promoting fears and scares. As a result of that, partly, and in response to that partly, anxiety is the number one psychological disorder in the U.S. at this point.
Can you give us some examples of that?
Probably the biggest perpetrator is local TV news. Even though crime rates are down in most of the nation, there are many places at near record lows. Anybody who watches local TV news very much is going to think that their communities are crime-ridden. Politicians routinely run on fear of crime, and that if you don't vote for them, you're going to be even greater danger than you are now. Local TV news stations don't often hear enough from people saying, you know, I don't want my scare of the evening. I want to know what's really going on in my community. When we talk about low probability dangers, sometimes what we're doing is avoiding ones that we either feel we can't confront emotionally or as a society, or that we just don't think we know what to do about. So a great example that comes up, unfortunately, very often, is when there's been a mass shooting. Then there's a lot of talk about things like video games and movies. The research is very clear. If they have any impact, it's very small. When what we should be talking about is unambiguous. It's guns and what we do about it.
You can hear more from Barry Glassner, Janet Napolitano, and other guests on our show, Facing Our Fears, at peacetalksradio.com. It's our October 2019 episode. Each year, 2019 certainly, brings stories of stalemated political divisiveness. Our Sarah Holtz took us inside a 400-year-old way of dealing with local politics called town meeting, an assembly of citizens that convene, deliberate, and make decisions together, generally once a year. Sarah's guests included Susan Clark, who co-wrote a book called Slow Democracy about this type of local decision-making and conflict resolution. Susan Clark is also the town moderator of Middlesex, Vermont.
People might think that town meeting is a relic. They might think that's this old-fashioned thing, and we don't need that anymore. We need to be careful because local control isn't really old-fashioned. It's really in keeping with our postmodern democratic sensibilities. I mean, our expectations as citizens have dramatically changed since the internet. And we are not, as citizens, more likely to sort of, you know, look to the leaders and, you know, as you know, sort of that kind of 1950s command and control model where, you know, just tell us what to do and you're the experts. And that's not us. That's not us as Americans anymore. We are much more, and millennials and anyone who's grew up with the internet is going to, you know, I've seen it happen at meetings. You know, an expert will stand up in the front and say something and somebody else will hold up their phone and they say, that's not what I just found out, you know, and challenge people that way. And so a model of governance that is much more not like a hierarchical top-down process and more like a wiki, you know, where we're really bringing in the wisdom and energy of people who are interested and engaged and living it, is much more in keeping with our with today's system. And that is what a town meeting is. You know, for all of its old-fashioned apple pie flannel shirt, you know, imagery that you might have, this is folks coming together to put their best minds together and really make things happen. So it's a very modern model, and it's being used as a model in deliberative democracy across the world now.
Are there any other examples around the world that kind of mirror the town meeting process?
Yeah, we are seeing, I mean, participatory budgeting has gone on, you know, in Brazil since the 80s, and it's, you know, swept the world. The United Nations has named it a good governance practice, and it is very much like a town meeting. There's also, there's the something called the 21st Century Town Meeting, is what it was called, America Speaks, which isn't happening now, but that's the process that created what is now where the World Trade Centers are, and, you know, they needed to when the World Trade Centers came down, they needed, what are we going to put here in their place? And they drew together people from all across the socioeconomic and demographic spectrum of New York to get people's opinions. And it was a model that was very much like a town meeting. So a lot of these lessons about inclusion, about deliberation, and in particular, I think, about how to empower people meaningfully are lessons we can draw from town meeting.
I'd like to ask you kind of a broad strokes question that Frank Bryan poses in his book, which is, how does town meeting contribute to civic capability?
Yeah, I think there are a number of ways. One of them is this sense of understanding that we are part of a community and really seeing the impact. When you attend and participate, you can actually, you know, feel the thread that you are in that tapestry. You can feel the tugs and you can see how you're enmeshed. And we know from actually really interesting research now on deliberation that people are changed by an empowered deliberation. We see it in jury duty research, for example. When I have been involved in a deliberation where I know that my decision is binding, you know, I'm not just giving my advice to some board somewhere. I'm not just sounding off. We are making binding decisions at the end of our meetings about, you know, is this the budget we want for this year? Yes or no? All those in favor say aye. In terms of our democracy today in the United States, you know, many people have argued that it's at risk and they wonder what we can do from the top down to fix it. My argument would be we need to do this from the bottom up. We need to do this with our neighbors together. This is the roots, this is the oxygen of our democracy, are these local decision-making processes on things where we can see neighbor to neighbor what impact we play in that democracy.
Middlesex, Vermont Town Moderator Susan Clark, author of Slow Democracy, talking there with Sarah Holtz about the participatory democracy model that's very much still alive in New England at town meeting. Several more sharp panelists contributed to that episode, November 2019's episode of Peace Talks Radio. And we're hearing highlights from our series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution on today's special program. I'm Paul Ingalls. Glad you're listening. The best town meeting moderators are likely trained mediators. For our January 2019 episode, our Suzanne Kreider took a 40-hour mediation course in Albuquerque, along with 21 others, who hope to improve their communication skills and to someday mediate professionally. Suzanne talked with one of the students, Liliana Urban, whom we'll hear from shortly, but first, part of Suzanne's conversation with Ann Leitze, a professional mediator and the course instructor, about what each of us can do during conflict to make peace rather than simply conclude that the other person is just wrong. Suzanne asked Ann Leitze why she teaches mediation.
I teach because I watch these skills change people's lives. I feel like I'm like imparting magic. I've had people come back and say that they talk to their teenagers differently. I had a woman say that she really thinks that these skills prevented her child from committing suicide. I've had another woman who's the director of a very large organization say that she really just goes about managing and leading people very differently than she did before.
Even when you feel like you're in the right, let's say in terms of justice, mm-hmm. and you believe they're in the wrong, mm-hmm. how do you keep listening to them and not say, hey, you're wrong? Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing we do at the mediation table, where we really, it's our job to come with a mindset of curiosity rather than conclusion. So I come and try to really understand, I hear that you really believe X and I really believe Y. Can you tell me why you believe X and why you believe that so strongly? And I think what we really try to bring is that everybody is right from how they see the world. So I'm not looking for the right, I'm looking for your right and the other person's right.
Define positions versus interests. That's something mediators listen for, positions versus interests.
So this is a huge topic, and it's a complex topic. It's not easy for most people to understand. But if you think about it, a position is it's a solution, it's a demand, and it's the what someone wants. So I want you to take your Christmas decorations down the 1st of January. That's a position. And in conflict resolution, we don't pay a lot of attention to positions because that may not really be what's at the heart of the conflict. Why is it important to you that I take my Christmas decorations down is what we're really looking for. So the position is the what, the interest is the why that position is important. And it takes a lot of skill and practice to move from understanding what someone's position is to having them feel comfortable saying and identifying what their interests are. It's a big, complex topic.
My name is Liliana Urban. I'm a lawyer back home in Hungary. I'm a junior associate, and I've just finished with 3 years practice, and I'm facing to the bar exam very soon.
What's the most important thing you've learned so far from class about mediation or about people's conflicts?
People's conflicts has a main core, and it's very, very interesting to getting there. So it's very special, like peeling the onion. This is the expression what we use as a mediator. And it's very interesting because as a lawyer, we stay on surface with this. We have different skills to find out the problem because we are looking at the acts. But here, you see something, but in underneath, there are so many questions. And this is really, really interesting that like really you have to use really soft skills to getting there.
For our listeners, what would you recommend for using those soft skills to get inside or peel the onion?
I think you should never stuck to the problem, like what you see first, because if you just see that this is a problem, it's not true, because maybe under that or next to this, there is something else, and you have to let the parties tell you what they need, so you have to wait. You have to really listen carefully because maybe they say just one word and it's so important. And you have to follow this route. Like, where does it come from? Why she or he said that? Because maybe it's not about that problem. It's something else. And there is a connection.
What do you feel is the hardest part about mediating?
I think someone is getting too emotional and they just can't handle this emotion and it's just going really, really far away from the real problem, or because just they are focusing something about something, but they don't try to understand why they feeling that. It just the emotional part, and they just stuck there with one feeling, because I think every situation you have to use your brain and your heart as well, but sometimes the heart is too strong, and this is really difficult.
That's mediation course student Liliana Urban and course instructor Ann Leitze talking with our Suzanne Kreider about mediation training. Much more from those two and others who took the course in our episode called Learning Mediation. You can read about it, hear it all, find other links on the topic at peacetalksradio.com. Just look for our January 2019 program. This is Seeking Peace on Earth, a Peace Talks Radio special. It's another in an annual series of shows that presents highlights from a single season of our series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. As we review our 2019 season of programs, next up is an excerpt from our episode about peacemaking in the LGBTQ community. Coming out about sexual orientation can sometimes bring on conflict with family, friends, and the larger society in which we live. Our correspondent for this show, Sarah Holtz, spoke with three individuals who came out about their sexual orientation and gender identity and found their own personal peace, and then went on to advocate for peace and justice within and outside their communities. Here Sarah talks with Sally Michelle Jackson, who came out as a woman at the age of 58 and is now a New Orleans-based transgender advocate and a radio host too.
And how did you become an advocate?
By accident.
It really was. It was a transgender suicide prevention site and forums. And I had gone on the forums to get some information. I started reading the stuff with people that were basically saying goodbye and watched what the moderators were trying to do to help them. And one night, this is how I actually became an advocate. One night, a young man on Vancouver Island, not in Vancouver, but on Vancouver Island, so he was up in the middle of the night for us. He was talking, basically saying his goodbyes to everybody because he was going to kill himself that night. And the moderator was talking to him and all the saying all the right things and all, but the kid wasn't connecting with him. So I typed a message. I thought maybe he'd see that, and the moderator approved it, and then he read it, and he responded to me, and we kept going like that, the three of us, for about 20 minutes or so, and then the moderator stopped typing anything. He was just sitting there reading and approving ours so we could keep talking to each other. And about an hour or so later, he said he was really tired. He wasn't going to make any decisions tonight. He was going to think about what we've been talking about. And so the moderator came on and said, remember, you have to give us 24 hours notice if you decide you're going to. You know. And then the next morning, about midday, he came online and said that he'd done some serious thinking last night. And he realized his cat was upset. Because the cat either slept in the living room or on his bed, did one or the other. But the cat stood in the doorway to the room staring at him all night long, never moved. He was still there the next morning when he got up, and the cat's still sitting there like this. And he goes, so I guess when you're saying that people need you and would miss you, it's really true, because he realized that even his cat would be very upset if he was gone. And so we go like, whew, that was great. They made me a moderator within a week, and about 2 months later, he'd had such a turnaround in his viewpoints, and I was helping everybody else, that they made him the youngest moderator that had ever been on the site at that point.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you find in your advocacy work?
There aren't any real challenges when people invite you to come talk to them, but it's when you're being sent somewhere because somebody else felt they needed it. Even if they're there, it doesn't help. If the people are in the room because they were forced to be there, that's the big challenge. Because you have to win them over to listen to you in the first place. I did a training at a sheriff's department in another parish. And everybody was so receptive to everything. I was told afterwards they were there on their own time, volunteering after their shifts, and the room was packed. That was easy, because they came to learn, because they had a transgender officer was working with them, and they realized they had a larger transgender community than they thought, and they wanted to know how to deal with them properly, because they didn't want to be the problem in their department. It's one of the things that people need to understand. When you've got someone that's very different from you, there's a tendency to want to back away because we're afraid of the unknown, okay? Well, how do you get to learn about that unknown if you just keep backing away from it? So the easiest way to find out what's going on in the LGBTQ community is to talk to somebody in the community. And most of us are willing to talk. So it's the only way to, you have to open lines of communication, as that's the only way to avoid just the perpetual fear, which then goes to hate, which then goes to violence. We break that cycle early just by learning.
Hear more from Sally Michelle Jackson and Sarah Holtz's other guests in our episode entitled Peacemaking in the LGBTQ Community. It was our May 2019 episode. You can find it at peacetalksradio.com. Look for all the shows from our 2019 season there, including some we didn't have time to highlight today. Our website is a rich archive of over 200 programs on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution, a real resource for you to explore. Thanks for listening to our program on the radio, via podcast, or online. Do let your local station know that you appreciate the show. Donate to your local stations, and know too that you can also go to our website, peacetalksradio.com, and make another donation to our independent nonprofit organization that produces this show. Thanks to our great correspondents, Suzanne Kreider, Megan Kamrick, and Sarah Holtz, our executive director, Nola Daves Moses, and Ali Adelman, who composed and performs our theme music. For all of them, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.
WNUC LP 96.7 FM Detroit.
Same.